חיפשתי בגנים, במקים ובשדות, אלב אהובתי, ומצא גופי, ונפשי רוצה מאוד, אלב אהובתי, ואהובתי היא שיר יפה כמו סון, תרית הדדולי, ואהובתי היא דבש מתוק, קרצה בעוד ועוד, תרית הדדולי, אהובתי, דן קודים ודים, אהובתי, אהובתי.
וואו, 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 וואו. SB Campus Radio. Hi everyone and welcome to yet another exciting show from SB Campus Radio. We have a great show lined up for you today. You wonder who are the amazing voices at the start of the show? Well, they are the Beatniks, the rock band rocking the annual Stable Care Campus Spring Party that's going down today right here at the Midrashid. We also interviewed Dr. Julie Trottier and Dr. Annette Rosenthal on the sidelines of the recently concluded CDA conference. The 49th BGU Board of Governors meeting was also in Stable Care, and we had some visitors in studio. So sit tight and keep it locked to SB Campus Radio. I'm your host, Francisco, and we're just getting warmed up. Amazing. Those are the sounds of Beatnik. We have in studio Gilad Vegai.
Yeah.
Welcome, guys, to meet
Dushat
Ben-Gurion, Stable Care.
Yeah.
Really happy to have you guys. Tell us about Beatniks. What's the name Beatniks and what does it mean?
What's the name?
Yeah.
The meaning of the name? Well, Beatnik, it's like a movement they had like in the end of the 50s in the U.S. You know, Jack Kerouac mm-hmm. and William Burroughs, all kind of writers and... Mm-hmm.
So that's the name,
mm-hmm. you know, it's taken from there. It's like our
heritage.
Adjustment to, yeah, you know,
okay.
it's referring to that, yeah. And it sounds cool.
It sounds cool, obviously. Yeah.
It's the beat and the nick.
And the nick,
you know, beat, it's like the rhythm,
the mm-hmm.
the move of the music, the
right.
like,
right.
and nick, it's more like the kibbutz essence or...
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe the hippies essence,
yeah,
like
it's
the
just like a sense of belonging. So you guys
yeah.
also belong to the beat in a way as well.
Yeah.
yeah.
So it's really great to have you guys on in studio. And you're doing a set today at the Spring Party in Midrasha, which we're looking forward to. What are some of your best songs and what are some of the things we can expect today?
Wow. Our best songs.
Right. Yeah.
Don't think we are the one to tell, but... It's like rock music.
Right.
It's going to be fun. It's like party vibes, mm-hmm. good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
It's dancing.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, in your album, like what song did you guys have the most sort of fun making or what's one of the songs that has like maybe specific, just really an intense
meaning for you? I think it was all really fun. You know, it was very
yeah.
concentrated. It wasn't like, it was like all the songs in like 3 days, basically. It
right.
was, so
right.
it's all, it was like, Mm-hmm. It's hard to separate. It was like a good experience.
Yeah, I'm really, I know it's a really unfair question because it's like asking a father to choose who's
yeah,
the best
can,
of
you
the children.
Yeah, you can ask the fans or the
yeah,
the
we'll definitely ask the fans and find out what the song that they like the most.
Tell us.
Yeah. What is it after this? Yeah, and another thing that we've really enjoyed over the past week is listening to you guys in the 50 years after Woodstock.
Yeah.
How was that experience for you guys? And what has Woodstock and that generation in terms of music given to you guys to take us with?
It's a question
the next
for
generation.
You.
Yeah.
We had a really good time at the festival. First of all, it was really good. The show was really good. And the energy and the audience.
Right.
It was a very special experience. Mm-hmm. I think we, yeah, we're definitely very influenced by the 60s sound and atmosphere and, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you say that's the same thing for a lot of rock bands right now, or there's
not
a sudden
change?
Like,
yeah, you know, this. I think it's like a very influential age,
yeah.
So everyone are like kind of influenced by it in some way, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
What do we have to look forward to, you guys, in the future? Is there any future album coming across or
new music, more
we can
shows?
Look forward to?
Yeah.
Okay.
You should keep track on us on Facebook and Instagram and find out about our future shows.
Okay.
We're doing stuff all the time, so
yeah.
Subscribe. Like they say, yeah.
Also in YouTube,
definitely.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And so, guys, we're really happy that you're in Stable K again. We'll definitely look forward to seeing more of the new music that you'd record.
Yes.
So,
thank you very much for having us.
Thank you,
man.
Hey, SB Campus. We are Beatnik.
We love you.
From somewhere in the middle of the desert, this is President Daniel Shamovitz at SB Campus Radio.
You're listening to SB Campus Radio.
Welcome to a very special edition of SB Campus Radio for the 49th Board of Governor here in Sadeh Boker Campus of Ben Gurion University in the Negev. We are very happy to host in our studio some honored members of the board. Max Gitter from New York, New York. Hello, Max.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Orly Haklai from Ben Gurion University. Hi, Orly.
Shalom, shalom.
Hi, shalom. And Aaron Yadlin from Chatzerim, who was sent personally by Ben-Gurion to settle the Negev. Hi, Aaron.
Yes, but I was not alone. On one night, we established 11 settlements around the Negev.
Amazing. I read it in the books. I am very honored to have you here. So it's very hot outside the studio, isn't it?
No, never mind. It's okay.
You've seen worse, huh? So you have a very busy week here for the Board of Governors, and I would like to ask you what have you enjoyed so far in this very busy week of the 49th Board of Governors? Max?
I've been down to Stade Bocaire twice, and this is probably my fifth time down here, and I've enjoyed it more than ever before.
Why?
Because I've seen a great deal more and learned a great deal more. I've seen more variety. I've actually taken a hike, as well as listening to some very interesting presentations by researchers, and I've seen some of the labs before, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of the labs while I'm here.
Great. And Oli, you know the university very well. Anything special that was in this visit?
Yes, I really, really loved the activity we did on Sunday. It was called Osim Rehov.
Yes.
And what it was students who are active in the community getting together with our supporters from around the world and really doing things themselves, planting olive trees. We painted some benches. We laid some cobblestones to create paths in a local garden. So that was really exciting to me because it was hands-on. We got dirty. We wore T-shirts. It was really just being part of the Negev and building something ourselves.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So I have a question for all of you. Why did you fall in love with Ben-Gurion University in the beginning? What drove you here?
the University of Be'er Sheva was my idea when I was deputy minister of Igal Alon, who was then the educational minister. I can see the development, the amazing development of the university, both in Be'er Sheva and Zde Boker, and even Eilat. Wow. There is a touristic department, let's say. And you know, when we decided to establish university in the Negev, it was against the will of other universities in Israel, and even the Minister of Finance said, we have no money for university in Be'er Sheva, very far away from the middle of the country. But nevertheless, we succeeded to convince the government to establish university.
And today we cannot imagine the Negev without,
without
it.
Of course. But it's very interesting that when Ben-Gurion heard that we decided about university in Be'er Sheva, he called me and said, why so north? Be'er Sheva is in the north of the country. You should do it somewhere between Be'er Sheva and Eilat.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll be back to the show after this short message.
Hi, my name is Chaim Hames. I'm the director of Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, and you are listening to SB Radio coming from Zde Boker.
All right. And now I would like to ask you, Max. Max, are you involved in something specific in Ben-Gurion University or American Associates of BGU?
Well, I'm now on the board of American Associates. I want to answer your original question, which was what caused me, or in my case, both me and my wife, to fall in love with Ben-Gurion University. And there were two things. The first was the visit to the Water Institute here. I read about it in a picking up an article from Scientific American in a doctor's office, I think, which mentioned the fact that Israel had become, to my surprise, water self-sufficient 8 years before I read the article, and it talked about the Zuckerberg Water Institute. So when we came here for a tour while we were in Tel Aviv 3 years ago, we were blown away by the research that was being done, and that Noam Weisbrod, then the director, showed us the other research that was being done. So the Water Institute was really the start of our love affair with Ben-Gurion University. The second reason was the students. Each time we've come, each time I've come, we made it our business to talk to the students and found them people of maturity, of purpose, and energy and mission. And there was a drive and a mission to learn and to do something and to improve the lot of their neighborhoods, the country, and the world, that was rather unique. So those are the reasons that we fell in love with Ben-Gurion University.
Amazing. And before we say goodbye, maybe you have a message you want to give to the students of the university. They will listen to this show.
That I have for them? Spend more time with us.
Holy?
Yeah, I'm just excited to be at BGU. I grew up in Be'er Sheva. I was born in Texas, but I grew up in Be'er Sheva. And now I live with my family in Meitar. And to me, BGU is the future and gives us hope for a better future for Israel, for the world. It's sometimes hard to be an Israeli living here, living in the South. But working in a place like BGU makes you hopeful that we can bring a change. So it's great to be here.
Good. Good.
Well, for me, it's, the situation is very enthusiastic. When Ben-Gurion died, I was Minister of Education. And I decided to bring a law how to commemorate Ben-Gurion's personality and achievements and so on. And I decided to bring Chok Ben-Gurion, and in the law we spoke about that in every school there will be a conversation about Ben-Gurion contribution to the state of Israel. And I wrote in the law that in Sde Boker will be two institutions. One is desert research, and the second, the heritage of Zionism, and especially the contribution of Ben-Gurion to this heritage. I wrote in the law that these two institutes that should be academic might be part of the University of Be'er Sheva. And this was fulfilled. This was fulfilled. Therefore, I'm happy to come here and to see how vibrant is this academy.
And we are so happy to have you all with us, and you're definitely a honored guest, because without you, I don't think there will be a university or students in the Negev. So thank you so much for your contribution. And Orly, you asked to dedicate a song?
Yes, I'm active in a movement called Women Wage Peace, women from all over Israel working towards peace for our country. And the song called Prayer of the Mothers is actually telling the story of how women have the power, Israeli women have the power to change the world, to bring us peace.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Goodbye for now, and I hope to see you next year on the 50th anniversary, yes. Board of Governors.
Thank you for having us.
Goodbye. Toda rabah.
רכישת רוח ים מנשבת מאי שם וכביסה מתנפנפת לצילי החומה בין אל-ארד וסמה ناس كتير بعيشوا سوا ما تخافوا تحلموا بالسلام والأمان ما تعيب سوا خما تبخر وشعبتي مي قالوتي פתחו שעריי אל הטוב האמיתי
I want to thank you for standing up for peace alongside your Palestinian sisters. I want to thank you and to let you know that in the world that we live in, peace is possible only when women of integrity and faith, stand up for the future of their children. Congratulations. It is my hope that you will continue to battle for peace in a constructive way. And I look forward to the day that I will come and join you. Thank you for the children of Israel. Thank you for the children of Palestine. Thank you. Peace. Shalom.
From the north to the south, from the west. Doug Sesserman, I'm the new CEO of AABGU. That's American Associates Ben Gurion University of the Negev, and I love SB Radio.
We were at the sidelines of the CDA conference and we met with Dr. Annette Rosenthal, who's a medical anthropologist and lecturer at the Department of Health Systems Management at the Faculty of the Health Sciences, and is also affiliated with the Tamar Golan Africa Center at the Ben-Gurion University of the Negev. Her research focuses on healthcare delivery in resource-limited environments in the developing world. Welcome to the studio, Dr. Annette.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
You gave a very fascinating lecture on epidemics in the developing world. What were some of your highlights, especially with regard to two of the major epidemics, Ebola and HIV-AIDS?
Well, first of all, thank you. Two highlights. So I think it would be fair to say that most of my studies are focused on HIV and not Ebola.
Right.
And when it comes to Ebola, I was on the sidelines. I wasn't part of the teams that were studying the Ebola outbreak. But as someone who studies epidemic, I've been following it very closely from the beginning when it felt like not a lot of people were talking about it. And what was painful for people who study epidemic is to see the familiar patterns. See the fact that this has been going on in West Africa, but no one is talking about it until Europeans and North Americans are sick. That this is what one of my professors used to call acute on chronic. We're talking about health systems that are already very weak, that are now dealing with an outbreak. And part of the challenges are not Ebola challenges. They're health system challenges, which is right. What happens when you have a health system that can invest $50 per year per person in health, and suddenly you have a major outbreak. Mm-hmm. And while Ebola and HIV are not the same thing, we see a lot of similarities, which is what drew me into Ebola.
Right. And in fact, what drew you in is actually part of the discourse about the role of social scientists in healthcare and in healthcare systems. You mentioned that there are significant, if I could say, benefits of having social scientists on the ground or discussing how to manage epidemics. Yes. What were some of this, experiences in terms of Ebola or HIV and AIDS in your case?
Well, first and foremost, it's always helpful to help social scientists around. We're just fun people. But speaking directly to outbreaks, I think we tend to look at infectious diseases under the microscope or from a clinical perspective. And we tend to forget that infectious diseases in humans are about people and communities and families and social interaction and cultural norms. And if we leave these aside, we're not going to understand not the outbreak itself or the epidemic, but also not be able to address human reaction to it. And this is where social science, not all of them, but some social scientists can come in and help mediate and negotiate what we know from the lab, what we know from the hospital, with what we can learn from people's lives. This is also the place where local voices can be heard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is very, and we all know that experience. You sit in the clinic in front of your doctor and you're not going to ask the questions, or you're not going to say what you're thinking because you're embarrassed and you're uncomfortable. And there's a whole power structure that is at play.
Right.
And part of what social scientists do is work with local communities to try to bring about a voice. And this also comes up in epidemic response. When someone in the room actually says, hey, let's talk to the people and see what they have to say, and not just to politicians and policymakers and scientists.
Right. And in much as there are gatekeepers in all these sectors, you actually chose this as a research niche. Please tell us more about your motivations and how you got into this research area.
Well, I think it would be dishonest to say that there was one plan. I think these things tend to sort of roll into what they've become. I was very interested in infectious diseases. I wasn't interested in the human aspect of HIV, which is where I started my study. And I started in Israel, working with undocumented African women who are HIV positive living in Israel. And everyone kept talking about how in order to understand HIV, you have to go to sub-Saharan Africa. You cannot understand HIV in Israel. So my next project for my PhD was in Malawi, working with rural communities. And I was mostly interested in the effect of the HIV epidemic on children.
And I actually started writing about it.
Right. But the interesting thing for me was that as I was living in rural communities and talking to people in rural communities, Malawi started providing HIV care for everyone for free. And this became a huge thing. So I started kind of gravitating towards clinics and hospitals. and realize that the next questions I want to ask are about healthcare delivery in resource-limited settings, how it impacts healthcare providers and patients, and how does it change an epidemic when you start treating people? Yeah. And this ended up being the book that you've mentioned,
right,
that is focused on the rollout of HIV care in Malawi. And Malawi is an interesting story because this is one of the not only the poorest countries in the world, but also in sub-Saharan Africa. And in 2004, under the devastation of HIV, the government said, we're going to provide free care for everyone. The international reaction was that these people are crazy. There was not enough money, not enough drugs, not enough health workers, no infrastructure. And yet there was a decision, there was an ideological decision, an ethical decision, but also a medical decision. People were dying and the economy was devastated and the political system was devastated to figure out a way to do it. And what my book does is try to follow this process and understand what it means to healthcare providers, to policymakers, but also to patients, to people who have to go through this process of becoming patients, receiving care. What were the successes? What were the challenges? Some of the failures? And try to put this in a global context because it wasn't happening just in Malawi, but in other places as well.
Indeed, as well as you speaking to the political economy of healthcare and health systems, with regard to HIV and AIDS, it's the effect of globalization, especially on, for example, the prices of ARV therapy, has been a discourse that many, maybe social scientists, maybe have been drawn to, especially with regard to the price of medication. And as you said, free delivery was a game changer. What would you say for now, recent epidemics such as Ebola? Because we realized that there were treatments offered variously to, if you could say, Western patients, but the situation is not in under control, if I might say, within African context where it occurs. How would then, you know, as probably as a recommendation from your book, how would then maybe the world deal with epidemics in less developed countries?
Are you asking me to solve epidemics for the world in under 15 minutes?
Some suggestions will suffice.
I think one of the major lessons that we've learned over and over again, but somehow we tend to forget it, is that this is not about isolated outbreaks. This is not about polio or Ebola or HIV. We have to start thinking in terms of health systems. And we've been doing it over the last decade. But every time something big happens, we tend to go back to the position of, oh, well, if we just have a magic bullet, a drug, a vaccine that we can use and make it go away, it only works short term. We have to plan long term. And the problem with planning long term is that the person who pays for it now is not necessarily going to benefit from it. And I'm talking about politicians mostly. They're not going to benefit from it later. So it's very hard to think long term and plan. Now, we've talked about the Ebola outbreak in West Africa earlier on today. If Liberia and Sierra Leone and Guinea had strong healthcare systems, this would have been a very painful epidemic, but it wouldn't have been as horrific. Or if we've mentioned the current outbreak in the DRC, part of the problem is the weakness of the political systems during civil war, of the healthcare system, and the break of trust between people. And you cannot provide healthcare or education when there's no trust. And I think what we tend to do is overlook the long-term problems, the more complicated problems, the ones that don't have a single simple solution, and sort of go for the fixers. And the fixers don't work. We know that now. But it's sort of hard to get away from the idea that it's just about finding the silver bullet that's going to solve the whole problem.
Yeah. So great. Thank you for coming to our studios. And before we let you go, would you have a specific song that maybe reminds you of probably your time in Africa or any other notable experiences that you have had?
So I think since we mentioned the Ebola outbreak, right, and I think this is a lesson that is relevant today and something that we want to think about, I'm often blamed for being the downer of the party. I come in and I start talking about sick babies and malaria and people dying of AIDS. So I want to remind that in this world of global health and the fight against epidemic, there are also a lot of victories and they're important. There are a lot of people who are doing fantastic work. At the end of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, when the celebration started, Block Jones, who's a Sierra Leonean
rapper,
musician, came out with a song called Bye Bye Ebola. And this was a fantastic way to celebrate local culture, but also the role of local culture and artists and musicians and the media in the fight against Ebola. So I think that would be a fun way to finish. It's also going to be stuck in your head for days now, I promise.
Thank you. So let's have some Azonto from Black Jones. Thank you for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Bye bye Ebola. We just want to say something to the people then. No vex. Follow me then.
Yay.
Ha. Nobody wanna see you rising. And when you do, they don't even like it. Ebola come, let them give you a license. Don't take many souls, go away. Oh, Lord have mercy. Don't even know what to say. Thank God that it's over. No time for them haters. Watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto. Follow me then. Ebola mash up the nation. It cause no frustration. Left some family pumping. Put the one who can't keep a skin. Oh mama, oh mama. Oh papa, oh papa. I thank God that it's gone. A new day has come. So go, go, go. Twist your finger, shake and wave and say hello, low, low. Make a freestyle and you can beat that move. That blow, blow, blow. Low balance. That's how you do a zone. Watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, 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 Azonto. Ebola come and take all we freedom go away. Say for the first time we ever feel this way. Oh no, it's so hard to bear. Why, follow me then. Big up to every Salomon. Nice to see we all work as one. And now right beats all those who are gone. Your memory leave on forever. See ya never. Oh no. So me say, and now forget all the survivors them. Then I be hero. Make we treat them right, show them love. Send no division. I say, now that you the celibates, the chill and dance and the jubilates. Do ya? Don't forget for do. Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, Azonto, Azonto. Now watch me do Azonto, 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 Azonto.
So we're right here with Dr. Julie Trottier from the French National Center for Scientific Research. She gave an excellent keynote address today at the Syria Student Conference, and we caught up with her on the sidelines of the event. Dr. Trottier has participated in the EcoPeace proposal for a water agreement between Israel and Palestine, and the proposal presents the design for an arrangement or an agreement between Israelis and Palestinians to share water in a physically realistic, ecologically sustainable, and socially equitable manner. Welcome to the studio, Doctor.
Thank you.
A feature of research on water conflict is a presentation of scientific discourses as knowledge that is not situated. Well, your research has proved this otherwise. What are some of your claims in this matter?
Well, basically, we're facing a scientific discourse produced by hydrology and water engineering that is totally robust from the point of view of the scientific methodology. The problem it has is it's relying on hypotheses concerning the social arrangements to manage water. Who's responsible to make decisions concerning who will be entitled to water when, for example? Is it the state? Is it an informal farmer institution, for example? And these hypotheses have not been scrutinized when this discourse was elaborated. So we have a beautiful technical discourse, beautiful scientific discourse, which is relying on unexamined hypotheses. So what I believe in is field work, so we can check them. And when we find that they don't resist scrutiny, then we really have to integrate that in the construction of the discourse.
A relevant concern when it comes to water justice in the context we are in is the shared water resource in Israel. How does this proposal conceptualize an agreement on water and that can be reached now before resolution of the full range of issues requiring a final status agreement between Israel and Palestine?
Well, the big difference between the proposal we wrote. I co-authored it with David Brooks. This was a joint work. The big difference between what we proposed and the other proposals is that we wanted to treat water as a flow and not as a stock. If you read the Oslo agreements, you see that they specifically mention numbers of millions of cubic meters for Israelis, for Palestinians, from each of the three main aquifers in the West Bank. This is treating water as if it was as immobile as land. It's treating it as if it was a pie, and somehow we could manage to make pieces of the pie to share it in a way that would be equitable and would bring peace. That cannot work. Physically, it cannot work. Because when you have a water drop that falls in the West Bank lies at an altitude that's higher than Israel, right? So it catches a lot of the rain. Now, when a water drop falls there, penetrates the land, say it emerges in a spring that supposedly is managed, say, by a communal property regime run by farmers, then it will go through the hands of this institution, be managed by this institution, then will go back to the soil. Maybe it's going to reappear in a Palestinian well run by the Palestinian Authority, then will travel to a house, go back to the soil. Maybe it will reappear in an Israeli well, will be managed by the Israeli Water Authority according to a public property regime. So basically what we proposed was, let's treat water as a flow with actors that interact along this flow one after the other, and let them interact in a way that maximizes the possibility for the next user to be able to use that water again. So minimize pollution, of course, and maximize the possibility for the user to keep maintaining its use.
Great.
That was the main novelty of the proposal.
Great. As indeed you have experienced, the research niche in which you conduct your research is indeed a very controversial one in this area. Are there some challenges you've experienced, and what have been your motivations as you went into this research?
Well, challenges. I can remember in 1999 being in Jerusalem at a conference on ecology that was mostly on water, gathering Palestinian and Israeli researchers, and a very famous Israeli hydrologist came to me after my talk, and he said, "You're an anthropologist. You speak of the past. We speak of the future." So basically, I had been presenting what people were doing with water that very day. I had been investigating in villages how people manage the water in Palestinian villages in the West Bank, and I had been explaining the property regimes they were deploying, but this seemed to this scientist, who was a very good scientist, he was very famous, this seemed to him like the Dark Ages. This could not happen in the 20th century, let alone in the 21st century. And this I found a real challenge.
Okay. So thank you very much, Dr. Trottier, for coming to our studios. And before we leave, would you like to dedicate any song?
Oh, yes, I have one Israeli song that's my favorite, but I don't know the title, I'm sorry. It starts with Ani Olech Lifkot Lacha, and it's absolutely beautiful. I understand the words of that song, and it goes straight to my heart, and I think it goes straight to anybody's heart, actually. And as you asked, if I wanted to dedicate, then it would be very nice to dedicate it to my husband, Marcel.
Well, thank you very much, and all the best in your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Merci.
אני הולך לבכות לך, תהיה חזק למעלה. געגועי כמו דלתות שנפתחות בלילה. לנצח אחי, אזכור אותך תמיד, וניפגש בסוף, אתה יודע. יש לי חברים, אבל גם הם קווים,
אל מול אורך המשגע כשהעצובים הולכים לים לכן הים הלוח וזה עצוב שלהחזיר ציוד אפשר לא געגוע לנצח אחי אזכור אותך תמיד וניפגש בסוף אתה יודע ויש לי חברים אבל גם הם קווים אל מול אורך המשגע וכמו הגלים אנחנו מתנפצים אל המזח אל החיים וכמו הגלים אנחנו מתנפצים אל המזח אל החיים נצח אחי אזכור אותך תמיד וניפגש בסוף אתה יודע ויש לי חברים אבל גם הם קווים אל מול אורך המשגע אני הולך לבכות לך תהיה חזק למעלה
That's it for this week, folks. As always, we thank you for the great support you give us here at SB Campus Radio by listening to all our shows. Remember, you can send us your requests, come chill with us at studio, or just share your thoughts with us on our Facebook or Instagram, where we are SB Campus Radio. We welcome all our new listeners and urge you to keep it locked to SB Campus for more new exciting shows up ahead. Jansi will be back with a great show in Tamil next time, so keep it here. We leave you with the great sounds of Beatnik with their song, Mashe Ose Lanu Tov. Goodbye and see you next time.
Pitom ani noten ahava lekula Ose balaga Ma ata Akshav ani zorek mabatim lekula Rotze gam vegam Ma ata Machar ani shokheach mikol achrayut Machar shtut Ma kore סימן טבעי על כל החתונות נותן מתנות מה יהיה ואי אפשר ככה לעזור זה מה שעושה לך טוב ואי אפשר ככה לעזור זה מה שעושה לך זה מה שעושה לך טוב פתאום אני שוכב עם כל הבנות שובר מוסכמות ואני מרגיש קצת אצלן ושיקול חופר בו מיותר כן, מחר אני נסגר על כיוון בחיים מזיז עניינים מה הייתי? איפה סימן טבעי על כל המשפחות סוגר את הפינות לא אני אני שוקע לי בהזיות ככה זה צריך לעשות ואי אפשר ככה לעזור זה מה שעושה לך זה מה שעושה לך טוב ואי אפשר ככה לעזור זה מה שעושה לך אפשר ככה לעזור זה מה שעושה לה
אהבתם את התוכנית?
כן!
תכנים נוספים תוכלו לשמוע באתר sbcampusradio.com עם כל הדברים הטובים שיש לנגב להציע.